Derek Lamshar from River Valley Health joins me live at the Druid. Lampy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Today, we discussed it earlier in the show about kids and training, and there's a lot more now that kids wanted to train earlier. But when we say kids, we really should clarify. Nobody likely should be going to a train. And you train a lot of, you've trained NHL guys for years. You've trained Olympic athletes for years. You train some, AAA kids, 15, 14, whatever. But we're seeing now some parents want to get their 9 and 10-year-olds in. What is the biggest risk and why that's not a good idea for young kids?
Well, at the age of 9 and 10, I think we overtrain a lot of those kids that age. Now, it depends what kind of sport we're playing, because some of the sports like gymnastics, I believe they're Olympic athletes at 16, if I'm not mistaken, or 13 if you're in Romania. At that age, you can train some of the proper skills. They basically don't know how to move properly. But I find generalizing that statement is basically kids need to develop, need to learn some motor skills, just need to have fun, do stuff, grow into some things. I'd look at some kids. We start to explore some kids at 13 to teach some what we call a proper warm-up strategy, because at that point, they're starting to do some skills, more technical skills, and if they do it right, that's obviously better than doing it wrong.
And most of that warm-up, though, is not involving any sort of weights other than natural body weight.
All body weight movements. One big thing in the sports world, I don't know why, certainly in this local world, is they want to make things, I'd say, more complicated. Our warm-ups are very simple at that age. They want to have some fun. We teach a basic, what we call hinge technique, which I've talked about in previous talks, the basic squat foundation, because every sport starts from that ready position, we call it. So basically moving from the hips, not the knees. But a lot of warm-ups, kids are doing jumping and one-leg stuff and lunges. A 13-year-old does not know how to do a lunge properly. So putting that in a warm-up or any kind of exercise, or they'll do body weight lunge exercise, because that's a very complicated move. It's complicated for you and I to do properly. We know we twist and all that stuff. So make it a simple movement and make it a little bit fun for those kids, because if those kids aren't having fun, they're not going to enjoy the sport and get better.
The risk of incorporating weight training too early, especially because if you put in weights and they're not taught how to do it properly, is you can become injured, right? And you talked about overtiring, because kids now some kids are playing hockey year-round almost, right? Fatigue. Why is that such a red flag where parents have to learn when to maybe pull back and allow their kids to rest?
Well, it's just development. You know, you've got to be brain aware, body aware, and while we were young, you shouldn't be tired at that age, and you need to develop skills in other aspects, not just your one sport. You need to develop many skills, which will make you a better athlete. And one thing that I find, kids coming into our facility, they're tired. 13. I was never tired. At least I don't think I was ever tired at 13. And you have to listen to your kid, because it's amazing. One thing I'm noticing now in my world is we have 13-year-olds that are doing 2 to 3 hours of training a day. And that's not including their sports specific. That's like off-ice training. There's hockey. I'm talking a hockey player. They have spring hockey camps. So they could be doing anything from, do some math, 15 hours a week of training and physical activity. And that's just way too much as far as I'm concerned, certainly at that developing age.
You talked about learning movement patterns, and a lot of us really don't know how to. And you've told me on before that you've had some NHL guys come in, and these are elite level athletes who come in, and you go back to the basics, and they don't know how to move properly. Yet they're able to overcome that and still be powerful and great. How is that possible?
Our foundation at RVH is basically the core. So everyone knows the core, kind of the pubic bone up to the, we'll call it the collarbone. It's that midsection. And it is very hard. The best athletes, if you go to YouTube and look at some GSP, George St. Pierre, YouTube videos and his training, that guy is solid. He can breathe properly. I've talked about that in previous talk. And his foundation, everything comes from that core foundation. And then your arms and legs just work as levers, and they can move. Then you build some speed techniques to get them faster. So many people develop sports-specific core, I'll call it. So if I'm a hockey player and I shoot right-handed, I'm solid in a right-handed position, and I can cross over better one way in our day. Well, that's just how it is. And that's not true. You want to build some symmetry in that core foundation, and that's where it all comes from.
Most people naturally have one side that's stronger, right?
Yeah.
unnatural. So I don't know if you're ever going to make it perfectly even. Some people are ambidextrous, and you know, but I would say the majority of people don't have that even balance. And that should just be something that you understand, rather than try to say, okay, you know what, I'm so much better on my right, I'm just going to now focus on my left, right? What's the concern about if you have a weakness, how do you go about fixing it without overdoing it or overcompensating, I guess I should say?
You know, it's hard. And if you get on the young population and teach some simple mechanics, that's when I started this process, I would have probably been, I don't want to see your 13-year-old. But 13-year-olds are seeing people, so see the right people to teach the basic techniques. But a lot of people like myself do harder stuff than they're capable of doing. Their development's not there to do that lunge and that jumping. You should never – I just want – if a kid plays soccer, they're going to jump out there. But I don't need to put them through 10 jumps in a warm-up because they can't jump. You know what I mean? So I need to teach them some basic techniques to start the jump. So hopefully you build some of that brain pattern because they're developing. You're building that brain pattern so that they can do this properly. And a good example with a little bit more developed athlete and a hockey player. We do a lot of single leg stuff. And I got a hockey guy in, and on his one side, he's like, I feel my butt working. That's the glutes. The other side, he's like, I feel nothing. And we do some one-legged exercise. And if you look down at his leg and foot, and his foot's holding on for dear life on that bad side. So we train some strategies, but you can't get that working. I could do that all day until that core works. So it comes back to that core, because that pillar's strong, then we can get the next area strong. And a lot of what our training philosophy is teaching. We teach your brain how to work things. If I just tell you how to do it, you don't know what you're doing. So it's like, whoa, I felt that. Okay, good. Now let's keep that going. And it's retraining that integration.
Derek Lamshere from River Valley Health joined us. Are young kids quicker to pick it up than adults?
100%. Yes. We always say they haven't built the bad patterns. So if you can get on it. I had a hockey player, a pro hockey player who plays over in Europe, I've seen for years. And he said to me, man, if we had this stuff when I was 13, just imagine how good I'd be. You know what I mean? Or stuff.
Yeah.
And now I'm working on some chronic stuff, some kind of the classic hockey hip flexor groin glute stuff. He's doing fantastic. But if you can, because now you're teaching, we have to teach stuff, we don't have to break down. People like us or that WHL guy or certainly that NHL guy, we have to break some patterns to bring him back. That's a lot harder. It's like teaching an old dog a new trick type thing.
I don't know if you've done research on this, but, you know, you talked about the overtraining early, and can it create long-term risks for kids? Like, I guess any sort of injury can increase the potential of a risk, right? If you start doing something with your hands, you're cracking your knuckles all the time, they say potentially you're more susceptible to arthritis. Yeah. Who knows if it's true? But for kids, have you read studies on that, the long-term effects of overtraining, other than maybe just mentally wearing out a kid?
Well, mentally wearing out, for sure. Some of our peers at our office have loading them too early, and they say loading them, we will generally...
And loading, for people, that's just putting weights on.
Sorry, putting weights on. Generally, once they've kind of hit that, once they're past that big growth spurt, which is usually at 16 is a pretty safe age to start doing that from research wise. Now, we work with a couple of basketball kids that, you know, walk in and the parents are like, they just grew 5 inches. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to load that kid right now because first of all, the nice thing is that kid's like Bambi on ice because he just got given these levers and he doesn't know what he's doing. So if you loaded that, you're going to kill the kid. Yeah. But most times 16, 15, 16, and there's some research shows their developing age at 15. At 13, you can do some simple loading, but you don't put any load. It's all body weight stuff. So once they kind of hit that big growth spurt, once they're out of that, you still, I think, grow a little bit from 16. But you're pretty safe in that zone. There's research though before that, the growing bone structure, before that, not good. And I don't know if it stunts your growth or whatnot, but, you know. And obviously steroids. Sorry, I had to say that.
Yeah, steroids aren't good.
Not good.
Yeah, you don't want steroids for young kids.
Yeah.
Even because there are still, you know, you read all the studies out there that they're much more accessible now in high school than they ever were before.
I don't know. I talked to some of the young guys, and they disclose, and some of the stuff they tell me is unbelievable. And these are 15, 16-year-olds. So, you know, these are conversations you should be having with your kid. You come see us, we will get you as big and strong and fast as any drug will get you. It's just, you know what? A lot of times, it's a little bit, you look at...
It's a quick fix.
It's a quick fix. And honestly, if you the problem is people it was a lot of hard work to be really good at anything. You know what I mean? And not saying you still have to work hard if you take steroids, not to get segued here, but if you get that foundation and you're solid, you know, it's like if you really knew how to read by 4, 5, 6, you read really well later on. Like, you don't need an implant in your brain to read. Like, you know what I mean? If you think about it. So develop them, get them developed, and spend time. As a parent, you know, go play games with them. Do stuff in the backyard. Play catch. Play some road hockey with them, whatever your thing. Because they're going to develop some skills out there that, you know how to – kids don't move enough, really, basically.
Well, definitely not in our society now. But the biggest one is firing – you talked about the core. And the core, of course, is from, you know, is super important. But
the abs, yeah.
Firing your glutes is one of the most – if you want to generate power, it comes from there. Yes. And most of us do not know how to fire our glutes properly.
100%.
Why?
To be honest, if I want to just blunt the statement, obviously the core, and everyone has a tight hip flexor. So probably, to be honest with you, probably because we sit all the time. If I just wanted to, if you want to take one note out of that, I'd say a little bit more complicated than that. But we, as a group, we sit at work, sit at school, video games, so on and so forth. I wasn't around 20 years ago to see if kids had better glute firing, and that's maybe why kids can get it quicker, because they're not as screwed up as us sitting as long. But I would say sitting. Our society is a sitting society. Yeah.
And so. Any parents out there, get your – and you know what? The active kids will naturally be active, and sometimes they're just going to fire. But what about the lateral movements? Because, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, a straight-ahead squat and a lunge and stuff. How important is incorporating lateral mobility into any sort of basic training now, or even a workout – or excuse me, a warm-up?
Well, lateral training, first of all, you have to master the structure and the linear aspect, so the front and back. But lateral training – you have to be able to open those hips up. You have to be able to move side to side. And it's also a different brain pattern, if you think about it. And we do a lot of marching drills in the clinic. We do it with a lot of the young guys. That's great stuff, and it's fun for the kids because it's teaching them to move their arms in synchronicity with their legs, but with speed and force and so on and so forth. And it is shocking how people move right leg, right arm. No. And they know they shouldn't, but their brain will do some hurdle drills. And if they have a disconnect, I had a young guy in the other day on the one side, and then all of a sudden his arms are wrong. I'm like, how did that happen? Then I watched him again, and when he came over that last hurdle, he wouldn't switch his arms. So something in that firing pattern, and what's nice is, because that's a whole different, it's right, left, front, back. Like, it's a whole different pattern. That's what we do, multi-directional, a lot of multi-directional stuff. And to add one thing, too, what you said previously, that's why that sitting in that hip flexor comment that I made, that's why the warm-up is such an important thing. If you're an adult, how many people go to their gym classes, they run from work, throw the bag in, take 15 minutes, do a proper warm-up, and same with the kids. You know, you rush into practice, everyone's like, oh, I got an hour. That warm-up, you can do more in 45 minutes of work with a proper 15-minute warm-up. Your kids won't get beat up.
So you're saying a warm-up should be 15 minutes if it's proper?
We usually give our athletes, we negotiate a 5 because they're like, doing 15. Mm-hmm. So if you get a 5, but in theory, a good 15-minute warm-up every day. Now, that's sometimes not realistic, but we usually, as a template, we'll give our athletes between an 8 and 10-minute warm-up, dependent on.
Quickly, what would a warm-up then, 8 to 10-minute warm-up, consist of?
What we've developed, we start off with the breathing, which I talked about. That just gets your body centered. We'll do a couple activation exercises, one exercise for your glutes. Depending, we'll do a shoulder stability one, so get the butt working, get the scapular region of the shoulder region working.
Like doing the W with your arms?
Yeah, W, kind of TW, okay. Yeah. We will do a couple mobilities, so that'll take us about 3-4 minutes on basic ground stuff.
Okay.
And then we'll get up, and then we'll do about a 4 to 6 minute movement prepping thing. So it'll be like, depending on their age and their development, we'll do, trying to think of something off the top of my head, we'll do what we call a sumo squat, which is just a stretch of your hamstrings.
Yeah.
You're trying to teach, we do what everyone hates.
And so that is when you squat down and then you grab your toes to stand
and
up?
Come up, and it hurts. The young guys like it, and that opens up spine mobility, hamstring mobility. The inchworm, I think a lot of people have seen that. That's for posterior chain, so calf, hamstring. That's when everyone's like, oh, I hate this one. Usually if you hate it, it's usually good for you.
That's normally when you're flat on your stomach, and then you bring up in a push-up position, and then you have to walk your feet on the ground towards you.
It's called posterior chain mobility, but basically for tight calves. You know what I mean? And then we'll do a knee to chest one, and basically you're trying to get your brain and body getting ready to move. And we usually give them, depending on their age, we give them maybe 4 to 8, depending on what we're doing, templated, and so that'll give us 10 minutes. So 4 minutes of ground stuff, maybe 6 minutes moving, away you go. Now, if you wanted to, okay, now I'm going to play hockey, you might throw a couple like quick feet drills, and I know it depends on their age and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
What about for men's league guys at beer league hockey?
A couple more beers, actually. You know, touch your toes twice, just, you know, go out there.
Yeah, just as, oh, so basically, and, for most guys, if you can touch in the middle of your shin bone,
you're good.
Good. Just slide your hands down, come back up, do a few,
maybe 3 shoulder circles. Yeah, there you go.
A few laps around the dressing room. But I bet you, because a lot of guys play, you know, slow pitch now and stuff. And most people, don't. You get out there for slow pitch and you throw the ball around 20 times to the guy across from you. Good? Yeah, we're good. And away you go play. You don't do anything to warm up your legs, where suddenly, you know, you hit that one down the line and now you're trying to stretch a single into a double and the guy blows out a hammy.
It's the golfer mentality. It's like, oh, God, I don't want to do balls. I want to have another beer. And then you go to the first tee, pull out your driver, try to kill the ball. And you're like, oh, my God, that hurts my back. And you can't figure out why your back hurt. Well, that's why your back hurt. You didn't do anything. You know, even 5 minutes, if you don't have time to get to the range, using the golfing example, you know, just do a few swings, rotations. Many healthcare professionals can give you a little package to do with that.
One quick one. Study saying stretching before a workout causes undue strain on muscles. Better to stretch after.
You know, we don't do static stretching. Yes. I think you've been over that with some other people, myself. Dynamic. Yes and no.
But static stretching now, most people saying that is not good pre-workout.
We do. I would not disagree with that comment. But you need to do some form of mobility, you know what I mean, before. We do our mobility. We don't do a hamstring, any kind of, you know, like if you look at the track guys, they do the leg swings. You need a lot of work to do a leg swing. You're going to rip your hamstring times 100 if you just start doing leg swings. So we just do 2 or 3 spine mobility ones, really just to get some. Because if you sit all day in that hip flexor, just based on anatomy, your spine's not going to be able to move. Then we get up and do some. So I would agree with that comment to a degree. A lot of people don't. The foam roller, I'm not a big foam roller before working out.
After, though?
After, yes. I'm bad. I don't do it, but you should do it. And if you wake up and you had a great workout, you're like, oh, my God, my hamstring's really tight. You probably did some things wrong. Your glutes probably didn't work, okay? But if you foam rolled that at the end of that workout, you will feel better. It's kind of a little bit of a cool down, and oh, what a great workout, and so on and so forth.
Derek, always great stuff. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jay.